Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barra, and joining me today is Brian.
Hello. Woo. I'm back again.
Today we're talking about the space race.
Yay. Space and a race.
Just like today, they also had some technical difficulties.
Yep.
It wasn't all smooth sailing, per se. So we'll jump right into this here. All right. So the origins of the space race actually can be traced back to World War II. The Germans were creating things that flew really high and really fast. Primarily, it was called the V2 rocket, which is considered to be the first ballistic missile. They'd shoot them from France, and then they would just randomly land in England, blowing up things. It was a true terror weapon.
England's pretty small, so
you know. So
might hit something.
What's going on is, as World War II is coming to an end, both the Soviets and the Americans want to get a hold of this technology. So it's a race to capture as many Nazi scientists as possible. So the Soviets capture a bunch, and we capture a bunch, and that's what's going to start our space program. There's a bunch of captured Nazi scientists.
Go us.
I think there's an ethical quandary there.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. Just a bit. All right. So in December of 1957, the United States is going to first test its first ICBM, which stands for Intercontinental Ballistic Missile. Basically, we could shoot it, it goes up into space, and then it lands somewhere. It was called the Atlas. We also begin to develop what was called the Nike system. These are kind of funny. So we know the Russians are developing similar systems. Both sides have nuclear weapons. The Nike system, the whole purpose of it was to shoot down incoming Russian missiles by detonating nuclear weapons in the atmosphere.
I feel like that's a bit overkill.
A little bit. Yeah. If you ever go to the Everglades National Park, there's actually a Nike battery there.
Huh.
Yeah. So yeah, we would shoot the missile up in the air and detonate a nuke, hoping it would take out their nukes. And hopefully the fallout doesn't fall on other people. The Atlases would eventually be replaced by the Titan I system. At the same time, we did develop another one called the Minuteman Delivery System. And all in all, if you're looking at this for military purposes, it would take about 30 minutes from something launched in the United States to hit Russia. So these are supposed to act as a deterrent. Like, don't do anything to us or this will happen. And vice versa.
When you say U.S. to Russia, do you mean like
Moscow?
Oh, I was thinking like Alaska.
Nope.
Okay.
Most of them are going to be stationed in the Midwest. 30 minutes.
Wow.
Like Domino's Pizza. 30-minute delivery system. So Cold War tensions, like we said, lead to both sides creating these massive missile delivery system type things. But then, 1957, the Soviets upped the ante, to use a poker term. They launched the world's first satellite into orbit.
Sputnik?
It was called Sputnik. It was scary. You know why it was scary?
Because they could spy on us.
Because it beeped.
Oh.
It went beep, beep.
I don't think they had any cameras, though.
No, there's no cameras. Okay. It was literally just a radio transmitter. And it freaked the American public out because you could see it going across the sky. And if you had like an old like ham or CB radio, you could turn into the frequency and actually hear it going overhead and going beep, beep. I mean, just look at how freaked out America got when that balloon flew over. Same thing. I mean, everyone thought it could carry bombs. And all of a sudden our government's like, uh-oh, they got something that we don't. All right, so both sides are going to begin to pour more and more money into research, trying to get someone up into space. But humans will not be the first into space. Both sides will send animals into space first. The Russians will send a dog. His name is Cosmos. He even has a little spacesuit.
I always felt bad for, like, the people who trained him and, like, took care of him because they just have to deal with the emotions like of a dog going into space and knowing that it's never going to come back.
I think he did come back.
He did?
Yeah.
I thought he didn't survive.
Oh, at least the picture I'm seeing is him stuffed in a museum.
Oh.
Maybe he didn't come back. Maybe it's just some other random dog that they stuffed.
I think it might be.
Huh?
Because I don't think he lived.
That'd be a Soviet thing to do. Americans, we send chimps into space. Our first one is called Ham. He knows how to touch dials. He is so worked up when they launch him into space that they fear his heart's going to explode. I think his heart rate went up to like 200 beats per minute or something. And then we give him a bunch of cigarettes when he lands because he smokes. I do not believe Ham is stuffed. I could be wrong on that. We like stuffing animals. All right. So also while all this is going on, NASA is going to be created. All right. So that's going to be the governmental organization in charge of space flight. So what they have to do is they have to figure out who is going to be the ones going up into space. All right. So they are going to basically have a tryout. And in this tryout, they are looking for 7 astronauts. All right. And these are going to be called the Mercury 7. So what they do is they send basically recruiters all throughout the United States and outside the United States. They're even sending people like the aircraft carriers and stuff. And they're looking for America's best pilots, test pilots, fighter pilots, all that stuff. They're going to invite a big group of them to a remote location out in the desert, and they are going to put these guys through the ringer, and they want to see who can survive. They do psychological tests, they do physical tests, and it's a competition amongst all these guys too, because they have that, they have a certain mentality that they're looking for, like no fear, nothing's going to beat me. There's definitely a level of cockiness. He had to be less than 40 years old. He had to be less than 5 feet, 11 inches. I'll explain why. He had to be in excellent physical condition. You had to have a bachelor's degree or equivalent.
Oh man, I was just going to say I could apply.
So Chuck Yeager is often considered to be America's best pilot. He's the first guy that breaks a sound barrier. Everybody in the country thought he would be the first one. It made sense, but he didn't have a bachelor's degree. So he was automatically out of the running. You had to graduate a test pilot school at a minimum of 1,500 hours of flying time, and you had to be a qualified jet pilot. And like I said, they are putting these guys through the ringer. There's like one test where they sit you in like a black room for like 3 days, and randomly they just start like playing like awful noises and like shooting things at you to see if they can break you or not. They put you through like how many G's you can centrifuges. Yeah. See how many G's you can take. They shoot you up with stuff, see if your body breaks down. Yeah, it's a pretty intense test. Well, anyway, NASA is going to pick 7 guys to be called the Mercury 7. All right, you got Malcolm Scott Carpenter. He goes by Scott Carpenter. Gordo Cooper, John Glenn, which most people know. Virgil Grissom, he goes by Gus because he didn't like the name Virgil. And then they're like, all right, what's your middle name? And he says Ivan. And well, Ivan being a Russian name, that's can't have that one either. Because they're like, we can't have a man named Gus. They're like, Gus is the name of a horse. But anyway, they go by Gus. You got Wally Schirra, Alan Shepard, and then Deke Slayton. So of those 7, 6 are going to make it up into space. Deke Slayton is not, primarily because he passes the initial training, but then it's his physical show that he has like a heart murmur, and they don't feel like it's safe to send him into space. So anyway, so we're training those 7 to be the first. Well, the Russians beat us again. On April 12, 1961, they will send a guy named Yuri Gagarin into space. And he will be the first human in space. And he actually orbits a couple times. The Russian spacecraft just looked like a giant sphere. And when they re-enter the atmosphere, they land in Siberia. Parachutes are supposed to open and give them a nice soft landing. All right. The U.S. space capsules are called Mercury capsules. Think about sitting in a cramped capsule, and you have about as much room as you have in the front seat of your car, and you're strapped in. And then they attach you to a massive missile meant to carry nuclear weapons, and they're going to shoot you into space. they wanted the Atlas rocket that they wanted to use was less than reliable. That one had the most power, so they're going to fall back on what was called the Redstone rocket, which doesn't have as much power. So when Alan Shepard becomes the first American in space, he can't get into orbit because we don't have the power to do that yet. His mission is 15 minutes. They shoot him up, and then he comes right back down. And he lands in the Atlantic somewhere. I think the Atlantic. Yes, I think it's the Atlantic. Alan Shepard, his mission is kind of funny because he was supposed to be launched in the morning. And it, once again, it's a 15-minute mission. It's not supposed to take very long. So he drank a bunch of coffee. But no one wanted to be the person that pressed the button and potentially killed Alan Shepard. So it just got delayed, delayed, delayed. And finally, he's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And they're like, if we take you out of the capsule, the mission's done. We got to scrub it. So there was like serious debate on what to do. And they end up telling him to pee himself. So he pees himself right before he lift off. All right. Second American in space is going to be Gus Grissom. His mission is a little... mission itself goes off, but when his capsule lands... So when they were designing the capsule, the original capsule didn't have any windows. And the astronauts are like, we need to have windows. We need to be able to see what we're doing. The other thing that they really wanted, especially Gus Grissom really pushed for this, was an explosive hatch in case they had to get out. Well, when he lands, the hatch malfunctions and it explodes before the flight crew is there to basically pick up the capsule. It fills with water and he almost drowns.
Oh.
But he gets blamed for it. And it's not really ever known what really happened, but he gets to blame for it. Did it malfunction? He says it malfunctioned. People say that he got anxious and blew the hatch before the crew was there. No one really knows.
I mean, after all the psychological tests they had to go through, I feel like he wouldn't have.
You would think that, yeah, he wouldn't have blown the hatch. And they just recently found it in the bottom of the ocean. Mm. And now I think it's sitting at the Smithsonian. All right, so after the success of several of these Mercury missions, that's when Kennedy will set the goal for the United States to send a man to the moon by the end of the decade. So we're talking by the end of the 1960s. There's several more Mercury missions. John Glenn is going to be the first one to orbit Earth. He orbits three times. He famously says he sees aliens. So he's doing his mission. All of a sudden, he sees like these, like he calls them fireflies, and that they're orbiting his capsule. It ends up being his pee. So they made fun of him. They said it was just a constellation, Orion. His is also an issue because his heat shield may have fallen off, and they didn't know if he was going to make it.
Oh,
yeah. The other one that's kind of interesting is Gordo Cooper. He was up there for 34 hours. That would be the longest American flight in the Mercury missions. Gordo Cooper had a side mission. He had some type of like, best way to describe it was like a metal detector. And he was supposed to be detecting Soviet missile installations. But he started to see all these anomalies in the Caribbean. And he believed it was sunken treasure. And he mapped it all. And then he gave maps to these maps like this treasure hunter. And the guy, I think he found like Columbus's ships.
Oh my gosh.
There was a History Channel series on it for a little bit pre-COVID. It was called Gordo Cooper's Treasure or something like that. Cooper's Treasure. It was pretty fascinating stuff. All right. So from there, we go on to Gemini. All right. So we realized, yes, we could put people into space and they won't die. Good first step. All right, so at this point, you get Gemini, which is going to be putting two people in the space at the same time. Gemini is an important step in the space race, especially for the United States. So we know we can put people into space. This is when we're going to start testing all the stuff we have to do in order to get them to the moon. Meanwhile, the Soviets have Vostok, which is going to be their two-person space capsule. And once again, they beat us. They'll have the first dual flight in outer space, the first woman in outer space, and the first man to walk in outer space. When I say walk, they tie them to a rope and they push them out of the space capsule and let them float around for a while.
Yeah.
All right. Eventually, we do all that stuff ourselves. So like I said, Project Gemini is going to be important because it does a lot of the things that we need to do. Also, a lot of the astronauts that end up going to the moon are going to be part of the second group that comes in for the Gemini programs. For instance, it's the first flight where we have the first American to do a spacewalk. His name is, I think, Roger White.
You were going to say Roger Waters.
No, not the guy from Pink Floyd. He was out there for 22 minutes, and then he gets grounded. He doesn't get to fly again because he doesn't want to come back in. And NASA's like, hey, buddy, you got to get back in. He's like, I can't hear you. What? And he's playing dumb because he just wants to stay out there the whole time. We have the first long duration flight. Gordo Cooper's out there. He's out there for a week. At one point, two Gemini rockets are going to be shot up in unison, and they have to
link
up in space, and they're able to do that, and they wave at each other in the windows. Then you have, can a spacecraft dock with another spacecraft? So we have it goes up, there's this thing called the Agena, and they dock up, and then it malfunctions and they start spinning wildly out of control. But Neil Armstrong's able to save the day.
Go, Neil.
Remember this, because that helps him get a gig, a future gig. All right. Don't know what I'm talking about. Also, we have the longest duration flight. I forgot who it is. They're up there for 13 days, 18 hours.
Wow.
Sitting in their car seat.
That
takes some endurance.
Yeah.
That's Gemini 7, and that's Lovell's going to be in that one. And then they have a mutiny up in space. One of them looks like he's sick, and they're like, hey, buddy. And he's like, oh, and he just like rips off all his equipment. All right, so everything looks like it's going great. We're on pace to get a man up to the moon. But then there's going to be a snag. In 1967, okay, we have the Apollo spacecraft. It's going through its test. Apollo 1 is on the launch pad. They're kind of doing like a pre-flight check, and all of a sudden, they're static, and they don't know where the static is coming from. And then before they know it, a massive fire erupts in the capsule with 100% oxygen, and the three astronauts on board are going to be killed. It's Gus Grissom, Ed White, Roger Chaffee. They can't get them out because there's a design flaw in the Apollo capsule. The door opens inward opposed to outward, so the pressure in the capsule builds up and they can't open it. Also, it doesn't have an explosive hatch. So Gus Grissom, who had fought for the explosive hatch, he got in trouble because of the explosive hatch. Now, not having one is going to be what kills him. All right, so NASA has to put a hold on everything. They got to figure out what happened. What they figured out was there was a short in the cable, the radio cable. That's why that static was there. And a spark lit, massive fire. Also, those capsules were lined with Velcro, which was a brand new invention. So they can hold things in place. That stuff just all lit up. The Soviets have issues as well. A guy by the name of Vladimir Komarov dies when his parachute doesn't open. And he just crashes into Siberia. All right, so they halt activities for 18 months, which basically ends their chance of being the United States to the moon. All right, eventually, though, we resume our missions. We build a bigger rocket than we've ever built before. It's called Saturn V rocket. It's over 300 feet tall. It's bigger than the Statue of Liberty. So big, they had to build a building for it, which sometimes it rains in. It's still there at NASA today.
Isn't it like the largest... one of the largest buildings in the world.
Yeah, it's huge. All right. So eventually we start sending some of these Apollo capsules up to see if it works. Apollo 7, I think, is the first one up. And then we roll the dice. We go straight to the moon. It's 1968. If you know U.S. history, a lot of bad things are going on. There's riots, protests, all that stuff going on the street. Robert F. Kennedy had just been assassinated. MLK had been assassinated. So the government feels like, especially NASA, feels like we need a win. We need to end this on a win. So Apollo 8 is going to get shot up. It's going to circle of the moon, and that's when you get some of those famous images of the Earth rising over the moon, and that happens on Christmas Eve. And those that video is being shot to the United States, so it's a little bit of a pick-me-up. Apollo 9 and 10 kind of test out some of the other things. Apollo 10 will actually start to deorbit into the moon. They get like a couple thousand feet off the ground, then they shoot back up, just see if the systems work. And that will lead to Apollo 11, which will be the first to land on the moon. Neil Armstrong will be the first man on the moon. He will famously say,
"One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind."
Yes. And number two is
Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz Aldrin.
My dad met him when he was flying one time.
Really? Yeah. That's interesting. Is he a nice guy?
Apparently, yeah.
All right. There's going to be five more missions that go to the moon, collecting data, moon rocks, things like that. Famously, Apollo 13, well, they had an issue. There was a bit of an explosion, and it broke their spacecraft, and it was a miracle that we got them back. A lot of people say that was NASA's greatest achievement, was actually getting those guys back. Watch the movie with Tom Hanks in it. Kevin Bacon. I forgot the other guy's name. Bill Paxton. Is it Bill Paxton? You ever seen Apollo 13?
No,
I haven't. It's a fantastic movie. All right. And we even start sending cars to the moon. We get the lunar rover. It goes 4 miles an hour.
I mean, you know, for being the first car on the moon, you can't really complain.
No, you can't.
But I feel like a person could, like, moon leap faster than 4 miles an hour.
But shocks, what amazes me is we did this 50 years ago, and people aren't, like, in awe of it still.
Yeah, we went from the Wright brothers to this in, like, 60 years.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. And, like, with the technology that they had, like, you have, like, 100 times more computing power in your cell phone than you have in what they were using.
Yeah.
And then when I teach it, people are just like, eh. It's like, oh, man, whatever. All right. So we win the space race. Go us. It doesn't really end, though. In the 70s, it starts becoming who can put up permanent habitats up into space. Russians beat us again. They have a thing up there called Salyut, which was a space station. We put up Skylab, and it broke. And then we had to go fix it. And then it fell in Australia. We eventually got up there. You also get some missions where they're like peace missions. There's a mission where U.S. astronauts and Soviet astronauts dock together and they have lunch in space, things like that. Eventually, we developed a space shuttle. That's what takes over space flight in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, early 2000s. Big thing about the space shuttle was it was a reusable spacecraft, where the Apollo capsules fell in the water and they were done. This, go up, land, fix it, go up, land, things like that. Russians try to build the same thing, but they run out of money and they're still sitting in a hangar. They have two spacecraft that look just like our space shuttles. I think they're sitting in like a hangar in like Kazakhstan. They've been there for like 40 years. All right, so a space shuttle allows us to do thousands of experiments, help build the International Space Station, so it is vital to space exploration. But there are two disasters with the space shuttle. Infamously, the Challenger explodes in 86 during liftoff, killing the crew. And then in 2003, you get the Columbia disaster, where it disintegrates upon reentry. Once Columbia disintegrates, that's basically the end of the space shuttle program, because they realized the flaw, and there's no way of really fixing the flaw. And the flaw is that you have to have a foam around the fuel tank to keep the fuel liquefied, but that foam breaks off at Mach 6 and it bounces off the space shuttle, which punches holes in the space shuttle from time to time. That's what happened to Columbia. Mm-hmm. And they realized there's no solution to that. So, where are we at today? Well, lack of funding is hurting us. So we had to rely on the Russians for a long time to send things into space. Well, obviously that ain't happening anymore. You're seeing the private industry take off, literally. Bezos and Amazon, they've been launching people into space. Elon Musk is shooting things into space. Richard Branson has been trying to do it. He hasn't been successful. This is weird. This is like fly something like up in a plane and then shoot it up the final distance.
Yeah, he's got like a high altitude thing, and then he like detaches a kind of like a rocket from it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't worked. I think a bunch of people have died, actually.
Yeah.
So the space race still helps us today. Several inventions that we still use that were invented for that. Satellite radio and TV. Wouldn't have our Sirius XM if not for that. Velcro, we alluded to that. Scratch-proof lenses. Athletic shoes, because the rubber soles. Freeze-dried foods, CAT scans, MRIs, cordless power tools, and Under Armour.
That, like the entirety of Under Armour?
Under Armour was actually created by some guy in his basement in Maryland, but the idea comes from NASA to keep the body cool and things like that. So where are we doing today? NASA. NASA's trying to get back in the ball game. Last year, they launched Artemis up, sent it to the moon. I think the plan is actually to send humans back to the moon in the next 2 years, 2 or 3 years. And then you have the Orion space program, which is supposed to send someone to Mars by 2030. So we shall see. So NASA's making a comeback. When I was a kid in the 80s, that was like, well, what do you want to be, Timmy, when you grow up? It was like president, astronaut. Now I feel like that's kind of died out.
Yeah.
No one really cares about space program anymore, which is kind of sad to me.
I mean, I did back in like 2009 when I was 2 or 3, but like, yeah, no.
Overall, no one really cares, which is sad. I mean, because it really is astonishing.
Yeah.
It's also, we're doing things now where we're trying to intercept asteroids and see if we can push them out of Earth orbit or mine them.
I feel like we could do that.
They said they found an asteroid that has more gold. If it has so much gold that it would absolutely destroy the global economy. It would make gold worthless. The asteroid would Mansa Musa the world. You don't know who Mansa Musa is. He is considered to be the world's richest man ever.
Disrupted the economies of like 3 empires.
Yep. He made all his money on salt. And when he was going to Mecca on the Hajj, he just started throwing gold to people. And he destroyed Egypt's economy for 100 years because their currency became worthless.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening to the Space Race.
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.